Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Yes, Google says it doesn't want to take over the world, but you do have to look at the facts now. There's the search thing, privacy issues, and today the company cleared a big hurdle in its drive to dominate online ads. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Reuters, the world's news and information source, working to make a difference every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters. And by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today. This one is the 20th of December. Glad to have you with us. Google has finally gotten the present it's been hoping Uncle Sam would pony up. Today, the Federal Trade Commission voted to let the online giant go ahead and buy up the ad company DoubleClick. The sticker price was just over $3 billion when the deal was announced last April. And ever since then, privacy advocates have been warning of terrible consequences. And it turns out the European Commission has been listening. Marketplace's Lisa Napoli reports.
First, let's look at what Google gets for its billions. DoubleClick places and tracks 40% of the banner and display ads online. Google makes its vast fortunes by selling ads tailored to your search. Jeff Chester of the Center for Digital Democracy says together the two companies add up to
a data mining colossus that will be able to track all of us wherever we go online and then use that highly detailed information to target us with all kinds of advertisements.
If you're among advertisers who spend $20 billion a year online, that information makes your ads more effective. But Joe Tureau of the Annenberg School of Communication says if you're a web surfer, it flushes your privacy down the drain.
It gives Google technology to identify the information and use it in ways that it didn't have before. So in digital marketing, the name of the game is knowing information about the people you're trying to target.
Tureau says concerns about privacy and market dominance have given the European Commission pause.
They understand that you really can't talk about the digital marketing world today without talking about privacy.
The deal can't go through without the Commission's approval. They'd already asked for more time to review it. April 2nd is the deadline. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
MBIA was the company getting under Wall Street's skin today. It is the country's biggest bond insurer. Sounds arcane, I know, but here's the punchline. Bond insurers guarantee investors they'll get all their principal back, plus interest, if and when the bonds go bad. Today, MBIA announced it's backing far more subprime debt than anybody thought. Our New York Bureau Chief Jill Barshea has more now on what that might mean for the bond market.
MBIA is not the only bond insurer in Wall Street's crosshairs. Dick Smith is a ratings analyst at Standard & Poor's. He downgraded ACA Financial Guarantee to junk status yesterday, and he identified four other bond insurers with potential problems. Smith says he's worried about the number of subprime mortgage borrowers going bust.
The performance is far worse than had been anticipated. So what we're concerned about is how much worse ultimately will it get? Will that lead to claims on the insurers?
Smith says insurers like ACA could end up on the hook for billions of dollars they can't afford. Sylvain Raines is a structured finance advisor at R&R Consulting. He says ACA is a small player in the business, but he worries how the credit markets might react to a downgrade of one of the big insurers.
So this is extremely dangerous because all the transactions they have insured, we're talking about hundreds and thousands, will then be downgraded at the same time. And this is a mega event that, in my humble opinion, should not occur.
Rain says that kind of mass downgrade could trigger a huge sell-off in those bonds and drag the whole bond market down. That could make the credit crunch even worse than it is already. Insurers have guaranteed a total of $2.4 trillion in bonds, and that's a big chunk of the debt market. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay from Marketplace.
Shares of MBIA took the dive you'd imagine they'd take today, down 26%. Otherwise, Wall Street was mostly positive. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Bear Stearns reported quarterly profits today, or for the first time in the company's 84-year history, we could say a quarterly loss. That much was expected given the subprime shakeout and all, but what wasn't in the announcement drew some notice, too. No emergency injection of cash from overseas. In the past couple of months, Citigroup and Morgan Stanley have sold off slices of themselves in exchange for billions of dollars from China and Abu Dhabi. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has spent some time looking into the politics of global finance.
Some three dozen sovereign wealth funds, as these government-controlled pools of capital are called, have saved up more than $2.5 trillion. But we don't know for sure because the funds aren't very forthcoming. Edwin Truman at the Peterson Institute for International Economics has ranked them.
They are growing. Right? Sovereign wealth funds combined with reserves probably amount to something like 12% of all international investments in the world today. And that's probably twice the figure 5 years ago.
The flurry of recent U.S. investments by sovereign wealth funds is raising red flags that the new owners will use their financial influence to advance a political, not a capitalist, agenda. Virginia Democratic Senator James Webb worries China is gaining new leverage in strategic negotiations with the U.S.
This is a totally different concept when foreign governments per se, rather than foreign corporations or individuals, are directly investing into the economies of other nations, and particularly in this situation that we have with China, where we have become so vulnerable to our greatest competitor, not simply economic competitor, but strategic competitor.
At a press conference today, President Bush said he's not worried.
I'm fine with capital coming in from overseas to help, you know, bolster financial institutions. I don't think it's a problem. I think what will be a problem is to say we're not going to accept foreign capital.
So far, no government-controlled fund has purchased more than 9.9% of a U.S. financial services company. Anything above that triggers a national security review by the Treasury Department. Still, former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers isn't as comfortable as President Bush is with the foreign shopping spree.
It's much better to be a country the capital wants to get into than a country the capital wants to get out of. But I do worry about the phenomenon of cross-border nationalization. And I do worry about investments that will not be pursued on grounds of value maximization, but rather to pursue other kinds of national and strategic objectives.
Summers says regulators should require fuller disclosure from government-controlled funds. But there's little of the congressional outrage that met Dubai Ports World's effort to buy some U.S. operations last year. New York Democrat Charles Schumer, who led that resistance, said he's fine with the China Investment Corporation's $5 billion investment in Morgan Stanley announced yesterday. That may be because U.S. banks have been an effective lobby, visiting key lawmakers like Schumer before announcing new foreign investments. The Financial Services Forum represents big banks in Washington. President Rob Nichols says the U.S. has an interest in welcoming foreign investors.
We're trying to open up for our securities firms, our insurance firms, our commercial banking firms, the futures industry. We're trying to get a much larger share of the Chinese market.
Nichols says we can't close our markets if we want them to open theirs. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Over the holidays, most of us are probably going to hunker down with our families and do some quality hanging out, play some board games, maybe watch a DVD or two. Sad to say, that would be so last year of you. This Christmas, Power Chords, musical ones, are providing the new bonding power for families. The video music game Rock Band has built a buzz among both gamers and the less technically inclined among us. Kevin Pereira from G4 Television is here to explain the appeal of one of this season's hottest titles. Kevin, good to see you again.
Great to be here as always.
We are not alone for the first time in our series with you. We have, first of all, the game of the day, the gizmo
game
of the day.
Game of the year is Rock Band.
It's
by EA and the company Harmonix that actually created Guitar Hero, which hopefully everybody understands.
Which you and I have done.
We've played there, but this is the next iteration, and we had to fill out some other members here.
Because this is actually a band
it's
game.
It's an entire band.
We're going to have me on vocals. You're going to do what, bass?
I'll play bass or guitar, either way.
All right. We've got two of our producers here. Stephen Hoffman is on either bass or guitar, one of those things, and Jennifer Collins will be on drums.
Yes. Again, for $160, the Rock Band kit, which you have to lug home like a roadie, comes with a guitar, the microphone, and an entire drum kit. So it's, you know, four pads and a bass drum pedal.
All right, so let's do it. Let's see what we got here.
All right, but now the interesting thing about what you're going to hear is what goes through a typical Rock Band session, which is first song selection.
All right, so we have here in the studio a monitor, which we're all staring at trying to figure out our thing, and it's going to be a lot like it was when we did Guitar Hero. That is to say, it's the lyrics are going to bounce along on the screen, and you're going to have certain buttons you have to hit on your guitar based on what's happening on the screen.
Correct. We're all going to share. The drums will see their notes coming along the bottom in the middle. Guitars on the side. Your notes will be up top.
So set us up with something that we're all going to sort of know.
Well, this is the half the fun here. It's arguing about what song we want to play. So, I mean, Kai, you're singing. I mean, that's
singing, so you pick it.
I mean, we could go with some Killers.
See, keep on flipping.
Bon Jovi, Wanted Dead or Alive. How do you not?
How do you not
pick Dead or Alive?
All right, I guess we have to do that.
All right. So we'll hop in.
So here we are.
Important to note, by the way, the new guitar, or the Rock Band controllers, rather, have buttons to shred towards the top of the neck for your awesome face-melting solos. And it has an effects switcher, so you can actually add echo,
the
reverb,
graphics
chorus,
are actually better.
And the graphics look amazing.
Yeah, the graphics are really good.
And you can customize your rocker. We can actually choose a name, individual names, make it all.
Yeah, because we need that. The same. Wow, I can do this. Only the names will change. Ah, every day it seems we're back. Always the place where the faces are so cold. I'm doing this on the radio. I drive all night just to get back home. I'm a cowboy on a steel horse ride. Wanted.
You got it. Take it, Kai. Take it.
Dead or alive. What does that mean?
Well, we completed the song 28%.
So here I'm going to spend $150 for this thing that tells me basically that I suck.
But see, I have parents that'll do that for free. But the great thing about this is
I have kids.
Yeah,
so we're
you only made it 28%, but you can hit a button, restart it.
Man, oh man! Now you played this with the folks at Thanksgiving.
I from the trip to the airport to my folks' house, picked up a 360, picked up Rock Band, brought it there, and that's where it shall live now because they are hooked, and. It's great. You know, even as a kid, I never got to play games with my parents. They didn't understand them. They didn't like it. They weren't any good at it. But this, my mom knows how to butcher Creep by Radiohead. So now she, you know, she can do that just fine. My dad's, you know, a terrible, you know, Black Sabbath drummer, but he picked it up and we plugged through it. And you know what? We had a blast. Four straight days of Rock Band bliss.
And we go out now with the crowd booing us off the stage. Stephen Hoffman and Jennifer Collins helped us out today in the studio. Kevin Pereira, G4 Television, Attack of the Show. And I actually made a fool of myself on my own radio program. Here we go. Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
If you just can't live without hearing me sing some more, or if you want to see pictures to prove that it actually happened, go to our website. It is marketplace.org. Just for the record, by the way, I was in chorus in high school, and I was good, too. Coming up, a Peruvian family says sweat is the secret ingredient to success.
My mother doesn't know how to read or write, so I never had a good education. But I learned how to work, and I know it's work that's going to take us forward.
But first, let's do the numbers. Positive earnings from the tech sector pushed stocks higher today. The Dow Industrials climbed a quarter of 1%, 38 points, to close at 13,245. The NASDAQ soared 1.5%, 39 points, to close at 2640. The S&P 500 rose about 0.5%, 7 points, ended the day at 1460. Oracle was the day's big winner. After the close yesterday, the world's second largest software company reported a 35% jump in second quarter profits. Its shares jumped 6.5% today. The world's biggest software company, Microsoft, of course, up 2.1% today. Strong earnings estimates and reports of a brisk holiday season bid up shares of eBay more than 5%. Rite Aid, though, not as healthy. Shares of the drugstore chain plummeted more than 31% today after the company trimmed its profit and sales forecast for the coming year. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.04%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering 529 plans for those thinking about saving for college at vanguard.com/529. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org. Want more from Marketplace? It's all on our website. You can stream, download, or subscribe to podcasts of all our shows. And we have text of most stories, plus special reports and the Marketplace Toolbox. Check it out at marketplace.org.
On the Marketplace State Book, here's a glance at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on personal income and spending for November. The University of Michigan releases its final consumer sentiment survey for December. And sick of the holidays already? Shopping getting to you? Tired of gingerbread men and secret Santas? Tomorrow is your day. Humbug Day. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
Bah, humbug, that's too strong.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The dollar nudged a little higher today. In the past couple of weeks, it's picked up almost a nickel against the euro. Every little bit helps, I guess, for those planning a Christmas holiday on the continent. European bureaucracy is about to get better, too. Starting tomorrow, you're not going to need to flash your passport at most border crossings. Megan Williams has more now on the expansion of what is called the Schengen Zone.
Hello, freedom, at least after your first passport check. Once into one of the 24 countries that are now part of the EU-Schengen deal, the European sky's the limit. Foreign travelers, especially those who need a visa to enter the EU, aren't the only ones pleased with the deal. The faltering tourism industry is too. In Europe, it's only growing by about 4%, compared to a world growth rate of 5.6%. The nine new countries added to the deal are mainly from Eastern Europe. EU expert Francis X. Rocca says while it'll mean more Russian visitors for them, Western Europe isn't as pleased.
What you've got here is potentially a conflict between politics and economics. On the one hand, this could be very good for the tourism industry. On the other hand, the people in Western European countries are not happy about the frontier with the poor Eastern countries being moved farther east.
Next year, Switzerland will open its borders. That'll leave England and Ireland as the only EU countries closed to the deal. I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
When you strip away all the big moving parts of international trade, what you have left is the lowest common denominator. One single person trying to make a living. Today, as we continue our monthly series, Working, the global textile industry. You've probably got a pretty good idea of how a T-shirt gets made, how the cotton's grown in one place and gets turned into thread somewhere else, how it's woven and dyed and cut and stitched wherever labor is cheapest. The work is monotonous. The competition is brutal, which makes it hard to imagine why anybody would choose to get into the business. John Miller went to Lima, Peru to bring us the story of one man who did.
When we first started thinking about doing profiles of workers in the global economy, the first person who popped into my head was Marco Moreno. I knew him because he was the husband of Rosa, who was our maid when we lived in Lima. Here was a guy with no advantages whatsoever, working in a succession of factory jobs, but who was convinced that with a combination of seriousness and willpower and family solidarity, he was going to make it. His name, his brand, was going to be famous. So when I heard he was opening his own factory, I had to go check it out.
Esto va a ser un taller de producción de prendas de vestir, tanto en algodón.
This is going to be a plant for the production of garments, mainly cotton. Today, we're installing the lights, hanging them from the ceiling.
The factory is actually the ground floor of his aunt's house. Just about everyone here today is family, the tile guy, the painter, the electrician. And that's the way it's going to stay, a family business.
I am the legal representative of the company. The production part is my brother, Danny. My brother, Peter, is going to be in charge of sales and relationships with the clients. Eric, the second oldest, is going to be in charge of design, purchasing, and logistics.
When I first met Marco about 10 years ago, he and his brothers had four sewing machines. That business failed. This time, they've pooled their savings and bought $30,000 worth of equipment. And they got a friend to put in $60,000 more in cash.
This week, we are planning to bring in 21 machines, so in 2 years, we'll be able to get our capital back.
That is, if everything goes according to plan, if the brothers get contracts, if they run at capacity, if they don't get stuck just making T-shirts, and even then, they still stand to clear less than $100 a month on top of their wages. To me, it seems like a huge risk for a tiny payoff. I keep asking Marco if he's afraid.
Afraid? No. You can be afraid of the unknown, but something like this that depends totally on us, you can't be afraid of that.
I know Marco pretty well, and honestly, it's hard to understand where all the confidence comes from. Because for him and Rosa and their daughter Ivana, the last few years have been pretty awful, starting when a neighbor broke into their apartment.
I was working as a housemaid, and Marco was working a temporary job, and Ivana was alone, and she was raped. She was 11, going on 12 years old. The boy had a key. He came in at 11 at night and took advantage of her. As parents, we were destroyed.
Then Marco was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of cancer.
To have an illness of that magnitude, it hits you hard. But it also makes you look at life in a different way. I mean, I've never been afraid of death, but I am afraid of leaving my family to fend for themselves.
The cancer's in remission, and Marco says he feels strong enough for what's next. Rosa still works days as a maid. At night, she sells clothing and costume jewelry in a local market. She loves the idea that she and Marco are going to be bosses.
Nosotros los dos, tanto Marco como yo, somos personas que venimos de muy abajo.
Marco and me, we both come from very humble backgrounds.
Mi madre no sabe leer.
My mother doesn't know how to read or write, so I never had a good education.
Y yo aprendí a trabajar.
But I learned how to work, and I know it's work that's going to take us forward.
But not, she says, at the expense of the people who work for them.
Yo estoy todos los días detrás de el que haga bien lo correcto por la ley, como debe ser.
Every day, I'm pushing Marco to do things according to the law, insisting that he and his brothers respect the rights of every worker.
It occurs to me that respect may be the single biggest reason why Marco's starting his own business. He tells me how at one factory he used to have the same job as a guy with an engineering degree.
The engineer who was working there put out 8,000 garments a week. I put out 11,000, 12,000, but they pay me half.
The next weekend, we're back at the workshop when a white truck pulls up. Guys lug in box after box of Chinese sewing machines, then assemble them in place. I'm trying to stay out of the way, and I'm also trying to figure out how on earth these guys can possibly compete with the giant factories in India or China. Brother Donnie tells me quality and efficiency. Marcos says family.
I think our advantage is the question of trust, to have someone who is going to back you up completely. When something goes wrong, we'll fix it together.
By late afternoon, the place looks like an honest-to-goodness garment factory, and Marco and his brothers and a few of their soon-to-be employees raise plastic glasses of cheap champagne.
Este es un brindis así, ofrecido por la apertura ya de este nuevo taller.
This toast is to celebrate the opening of our new workshop, Marco says. Now the real work starts. And in a sudden lapse of judgment, he names me the honorary patron of the enterprise. That was all about a year ago. Looking for an update, I get through to Marco on Skype.
Hello?
Hello, Marco.
Sí, me soy yo. Buenas noches.
Buenas noches. ¿Cómo estás?
Que ya terminando el día.
I ask him about the business, and he tells me that basically everything that could go wrong did.
El problema eventual que sucedió.
They couldn't find skilled workers. They trusted some people they shouldn't have trusted. The big blow was actually a huge order, 80,000 pieces. For a tiny shop, it was just too much. They shut down after 8 months, put the sewing machines in storage. But Marco says it's been a good year. He got a job at a big company that produces for Adidas. He's earning 3 times what he was earning before and working one-on-one with major clients. He and Rosa moved into a bigger place where Ivana, at 16, finally has her own room. Marco's been so busy that he hasn't even thought about the cancer.
El objetivo general no ha cambiado.
The general objective hasn't changed, to have our own company, our own brand. That's not just my dream, but the dream of my father, my mother, everyone. I started out as a little mouse, and I don't think I have become a hippopotamus. But I'm not finished with this. I mean, you can't give up on something you believe in.
John Miller brought us that story from Peru. It's part of our series Working, a collaboration with Homelands Productions. You can hear earlier installments at our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a well-thought-out allocation strategy can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, Coca-Cola uses Saint Nick as its front man during the holiday season. Nevertheless, some Russian Orthodox faithful have accused the company of blasphemy. Ads running in Nizhny Novgorod, about 250 miles from Moscow, feature a Coke bottle superimposed over those signature onion domes Russian churches have. Coke says it was just trying to promote Russian culture. Locals, however, disagree. They've lodged a formal complaint, and Russian prosecutors say they're looking into legal action. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow gained 38 points. That's a quarter of 1%. The Nasdaq added 39 points, a percent and a half. The S&P 500 plumped up 7 points. That's a half of 1% there. Kevin Arnovitz, Patty Hirsch, Margaret Koval, Karen Lowe, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor of the program is George Judson. If you happen to miss something on the radio today, that's all right. We've got a podcast. You can check it out. The link is at our homepage. It's marketplace.org. Coming up on the radio next time, Les Tinsel this year at Wall Street Holiday Bashes.
You know, the space is lovely. And the DJ will still provide great music, but it won't be the same, oh my God, when you walk in.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. I hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.